This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. When I hear someone say, "It's not your fault," I get real skeptical. But Dr. Barry Sears' research convinced me that if you're overweight, it probably isn't your fault. The bad news is that most Americans are carrying around a lot of toxic fat, which, like cancer, can spread and cause havoc to many organs. The good news is that research has found solutions in a very reasonable diet and in taking fish oil supplements. Dr. Sears, creator of the Zone Diet, has been researching cancer and diets for decades and just came out with his newest New York Times bestseller, Toxic Fat. Today, you'll learn how people like former Department of Agricultural Secretary Earl Butz helped make millions of people fat and what you can do to undo the damage, lose weight, and be healthier. When I look at the anti-aging literature, I'm seeing a recent convergence on three ideas. One, that if there was one supplement you should take, it's fish oil. Secondly, the importance of controlling insulin levels. And third, seeing inflammation as the key process in both disease and aging. Dr. Sears has been saying that for the last 10 years or so. He's about 10 years ahead of the curve. So get ready to have your eyes opened by the researcher who makes more sense and has more data than any diet researcher or diet advocate you've ever heard of. Dr. Sears, welcome.
Well, thank you very much.
I'd like to start with some of the research because it's just so compelling. Tell us about the large-scale studies with children and nutrition and exercise.
Well, again, that we're led to believe that our obesity epidemic, if we'd only eat less and exercise more, that'd be the solution. Well, they've actually done studies, and these are very large-scale studies, multi-state studies, multi-center studies with children, where they teach them all about nutrition, and they exercise them, give them much more physical exercise every day compared to the control groups who are giving no education about nutrition and no exercise. So these studies, these large-scale studies with children at a high risk of becoming obese, what they found is at the end of 2 years, the kids were far more knowledgeable about nutrition. That's good.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no difference in weight between the control group and the active group. And yet we keep on hearing educators saying, if they only eat less and exercise more, we'll solve the problem, saying it's not that simple. It's far more complex than people have been led to believe.
I mean, those are astounding results that just shake up common sense. Tell us about food pyramid diets compared with the Zone Diet.
What you have is that everybody wants to find, you know, what's the right way of eating. Well, it's really a little hard because the fact is we're all a little genetically different. But what diets have done in the past is try to take out a boogeyman. Oh, who's the evil villain? Well, the early days of about from the USDA, you say, fat's the villain. If we only take all fat out of the diet, we'll be thin forever. Basically saying, if no fat touches my lips, no fat reaches my hips. Very attractive thinking. Unfortunately, it's dead wrong. On the other hand, you had people like Bob Atkins saying, carbohydrates, that's the evil villain. Take all carbohydrates out of the diet. Well, what happens when you start to basically move things around, going to one extreme or the next, your hormones rebel. And that's why diets fail. The diet doesn't fail. It's your hormones, the changes in your hormones caused by the diet. That's the reason for failure. So when you look at the Zone Diet, it's based on really a word most people hate to hear. It's called moderation. It's moderate in carbohydrate. It's moderate in fat. And it's moderate in protein. Now, why is that important? Because that's the only way you can keep your hormones in a zone that's not too high but not too low, and do that for a lifetime without this counter-rebellion of swinging from one side of the hormonal landscape to the other.
And you've had studies in which the traditional food pyramid diet has been put head-to-head with the Zone Diet, and what kind of results did you get?
Well, in every carefully controlled study, and what is a carefully controlled study? You treat humans like lab rats. You do not allow them to think. you basically prepare all the foods for them and watch them eat the food. So these are very expensive studies, and they're very rarely done. But that's the only way you can find out what's the best diet. So in every diet study that's been published under those conditions, the zone diet has been found to be superior in hormonal control, superior in appetite control, superior in blood sugar control, superior in blood lipid control, superior in fat loss, and the most important aspect, superior in reducing inflammation throughout the body.
Did we also see weight loss?
I said fat loss because that's different than weight loss. You can lose a lot of weight, but it's losing fat that's your number one factor. So you can go on to a high-protein diet and lose a lot of weight. A lot of it initially is water loss, but you turn out that the fat loss is not as great as you would otherwise think.
So we're getting much healthier people from the zone diet.
Well, and that's the whole game. It's not about, you know, basically looking better in a swimsuit. Mm-hmm. It's living longer and living better. That's a pretty good definition of anti-aging medicine.
You have pictures on your website of the heaviest man in the world. What interventions did you do with him?
Well, this was a case of Manuel Uribe, who at the time was the heaviest man in the world. We started with Manuel when he weighed 1,230 pounds. And that's a fairly large amount of poundage. But we knew Manuel really had his major problem was he was inflamed. So we knew this would be actually easy pickings. So we put him on a strict zone diet, and we gave him lots of fish oil. I'll tell the reasons why that's important. And for the first time in Manuel's life, he was no longer hungry. And as a consequence, he started to lose weight. You know, if you're never hungry, cutting back in calories is pretty simple. If you're always hungry, cutting back in calories is very difficult, especially if you're surrounded by food. So to date, Manuel's lost about 450 pounds.
Wow.
Still weighs about 800 pounds, but he may be the healthiest man in all of Mexico. His blood cholesterol is perfect. His blood sugar is perfect. His blood pressure is that of a teenager. His resting heart rate is that of a trained athlete, even though he hasn't left his bed in the last 7 years. And this weekend, I'm going down to be Manuel's best man at his wedding.
Wow.
So you look at Manuel, say, this man, it's like he has one foot in the grave and the other foot on banana peel. Yet you look at his blood and say, why can't my patients look like Manuel? A total disconnect.
I'm just curious, is he a pretty bright guy too?
Very bright guy, very spiritual, very engaging, just the nicest guy you'd ever want to be in a room with. Yet, basically, it wasn't that the weight gain really wasn't his fault. Is basically his genes were put in the crosshairs of changes in the diet, which are causing them to be expressed adversely. And with the phenotype, that is basically what causes what happens when genes go the wrong way of gaining weight.
And the biggest key with him was fish oil.
Exactly. And the reason why, because, again, what causes weight gain is not basically moral inferiority. We think of anybody who gains weight, they must be morally inferior. It's obvious. Or it's not sloth and gluttony. What it is, it's caused by inflammation. And if you're genetically predisposed, as about 75% of Americans are, to basically a pro-inflammatory diet, that's what we're eating today, that basically is now activating inflammation throughout all of our body, one of the first consequences of that is an increase in body fat.
Tell us what inflammation is.
There's two types of inflammation. The first type we're familiar with. It hurts. That's why you see a doctor. If we didn't have inflammation, we'd be a sitting duck in terms of a very hostile world. Microbial invasions like parasites or bacteria or fungi or viruses will get in there and attack the body. Our internal inflammation, basically these are the dogs of war, will attack those, destroy them, but that in the process, that causes the pain, the swelling, the redness, the classical definition of inflammation. Another thing that can turn on inflammation is injuries. That's when you twist your ankle, what happens? There's pain, swelling, redness. But there's a third type of thing that can turn on inflammation, and we're only recognizing it now. It's the diet. But the type of inflammation this turns on doesn't cause pain. It's below the perception of pain. And since there's no pain, you have nothing to stop it. But what's happening now, in each of your 100 trillion cells, they're under constant inflammatory attack until there's enough in damage that we call it chronic disease. Could be heart disease, it could be cancer, it could be Alzheimer's. We know each of those diseases are driven by inflammation, not the type that causes pain, but the type that basically takes a relentless toll until there's enough damage that we have real pain, which we really have no way of treating.
Mm-hmm. We'll get back to that. I want to do a couple more of the dramatic examples you've had. Tell us about the coal miner with the coma.
Well, remember about 3 years ago, there was a major explosion in West Virginia at the Sago Mine, where 13 miners were trapped in a carbon monoxide atmosphere for 41 hours. And when they finally broke through, 12 of the 13 miners were dead. They brought back the one survivor, but he was almost dead on arrival. When they brought him out of the mine, he basically had a heart failure, kidney failure, liver failure, and brain failure. He had no white matter. It had been destroyed by the carbon monoxide in the mine. So his chances for survival were slim. If he survived, he'd probably end up basically being a vegetable the rest of his life. Now, the first thing his neurosurgeon did was to give me a call. He said, I'm thinking of giving fish oil to our one survivor. How much would you recommend? I said, well, based on our studies we've done with children with ADHD, he'll probably need about 15 grams a day. That's a massive level. Mm-hmm. He said, whoa, he's going to bleed to death. I said, I guarantee you he will not bleed to death. So they started putting the 15 grams a day of the fish oil, of the omega-3 fatty acids in the fish oil, into his feeding tube. And 2 months later, he came out of his coma. And 2 months later after that, he went home. His heart was normal. His liver was normal. His kidney was normal. And he gave a press conference worthy of any politician. Well, since that
That's
time.
That's a low standard these days.
And everybody said, it's a medical miracle. I said, no, it's no medical miracle. It was aggressive use of anti-inflammatory diet to control the inflammation. Now, since that time, he's also had 2 healthy children. So I guess everything's working okay.
I was curious in that case whether some of the benefit of the fish oil may have been that a lot of the IVs hospitals give don't have much cholesterol, and if he's in that shape, he's going to need a lot of cholesterol to get his brain functioning and to do a lot of repair.
Right now, we have a war on cholesterol. Cardiologists hate basically cholesterol, saying we must lower it because otherwise you get a heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
Neurologists say, wait a minute, that's a critical compound for the brain. Cardiologists love statins, the lower cholesterol. Neurologists hate statins because they lower cholesterol. Again, you're looking for this balance. But what causes a heart attack is not cholesterol, it's inflammation. That's why our number one drug to prevent a heart attack remains an aspirin. It doesn't lower cholesterol, but it lowers inflammation. At the same time, many of our diseases, neurological diseases, are known to be inflammatory diseases. Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis. So again, we come back to, like, all roads lead back to Rome. Basically, it's inflammation, inflammation, inflammation. Whether we're talking about obesity or basically neurological problems or basically just living longer and better.
And in that heart attack situation, it's the arteries that are getting inflamed and so the blood's not getting through, and it's simple as that.
And what really kills you in heart disease are these small plaques that you can't see, but they're like little pimples. And if they explode due to inflammation, you're a dead man. So the best way to reduce the inflammation in those plaques, this has been shown a couple of years ago in Lancet, take lots of fish oil.
And we'll get to that in a few minutes. I want one more of your amazing track record. You've worked with Olympic athletes. What were you able to do for them that all their trainers and nutritionists and other experts couldn't do?
Well, when you deal with Olympic athletes, these are the best of the best. And in the Olympics, basically who wins that gold medal is totally dependent on whose hormones were peaked at that particular day. And that's why that we can basically now use food as a powerful drug to basically peak hormonal levels and give them an unfair advantage. And that's why the athletes I have worked with personally in the last 4 Olympics have won 25 gold medals. The day of competition, they had a hormonal edge their opponents did not have.
Awesome. Earl Butz. I remember Johnny Carson ragging on him so much. And, of course, Earl had a knack for putting his foot in his mouth, which made it even funnier, and his name's funny. You say that he was one of the leaders in not only getting food to be very cheap, which was a good thing, but inadvertently getting us fat. How did that happen?
Turns out that, again, we go back, what causes obesity? It turns out to be inflammation. And think back about in the early 70s. Obesity was not a major problem in America. And today, it basically is our number one topic we talk about. Well, it turns out that at the first oil shocks we had in the early 70s, mm-hmm. President Nixon said, oh my goodness, how are we going to pay for all this oil? And Earl says, I've got an idea, Dick. What we'll do, we'll tell the farmers of America to put the pedal to the metal. and say, we're going to basically now make lots of crops and export them and bring the money back in the United States. And Dick says, Earl, that's a great idea. Well, unfortunately, the only two crops that would lend themselves to industrial production of this magnitude were corn and soybeans. From corn, basically we get cheap carbohydrates. And as a consequence of that, basically insulin levels begin to rise. And from soybeans, we get lots of omega-6 fatty acid. And that's the building block to make these powerful hormones which cause inflammation. When high levels of insulin coming from cheap carbohydrates begin to mix with high levels of omega-6 fatty acids coming from corn oil, soybean oil, safflower oil, then you get a very toxic combustion of increased inflammation. And so it was with best of intentions that our problems today of our healthcare system, the obesity, the diabetes, the heart disease, the cancer, the Alzheimer's, can really be traced back to that decision to basically tell the American farmers to put the pedal to the metal, and the things which are now the cheapest form of calories in the world, cheap refined carbohydrates and vegetable oils, are coming back to haunt us, because when mixed together, you get a pro-inflammatory diet, and that begins to activate ancient genes, which are now being turned against us.
And it wasn't just Americans, but that diet got exported to a lot of the world as well.
Exactly. Just as the Chinese become the low-cost producers of manufactured goods, Peoria, Illinois is a low-cost producer of the materials required to make processed foods worldwide, and we've been exporting that. And that's why you're finding obesity becoming a worldwide phenomenon. We're basically exporting inflammation around the globe.
Now, I see a lot of soy in your recommended diets. Is it just the soybean oil that's a problem?
Exactly. The soy protein is not the problem. It's the soybean oil. So, again, what you look for are, it's not the fat is a villain. It's the wrong type of fat. So you look for those fats that basically have very low, if any, omega-6 fatty acids. Which types of fats would be in that category? Things like olive oil or slivered almonds or guacamole. And basically saying, if I pull these omega-6 fats out of my diet, I'll live longer and live better. That's what the data says, loud and clear. Unfortunately, those are same omega-6 fats are the cornerstone of American agribusiness.
So the biggest problem is that we've gotten too many omega-6 fats in our diet.
Exactly, because we always had one trump card, the species. If we took in large amounts of omega-3 fats, these are things, the fats you find in fish oils. Because at high enough levels, as I've talked about in the previous examples, they have very profound anti-inflammatory benefits. But our consumption of fish oils has decreased by nearly a factor of 90-95% in the last century. So our last safety card has been pulling out of the American diet. And that's why I call this the perfect nutritional storm, where all three of these factors, basically none sufficient by itself, but when they combined, would unleash this level of basically an epidemic of inflammation in America.
Let's look at the not your fault concept. You say that 75% of our metabolism comes from our genes. What goes wrong with people who are overweight or obese?
Well, what happens there, they have genetically what I call a fat trap. A fat trap, obviously the calories go in the mouth. It's not the calories are disappearing somehow. They're going in the mouth, but calories are meaningless unless they're converted into chemical energy that drives the body. And unfortunately, for those who are genetically predisposed, a diet that's generating lots of insulin will basically block the release of that, trapping them in their adipose tissue, or basically a fat trap. And so what happens, these individuals either have to eat more total calories to get enough coming out to make ATP to drive the body, or they have to slow down all physical activity so they can conserve the very small amounts of that chemical energy the body already has. This means they either become a glutton or a sloth. As a consequence of the fat trap, the obesity was not caused by being a glutton or a sloth. It is caused by basically activation of that fat trap by recent changes in our diet.
And if they get on the treadmill, their body is very inefficient at converting the fat that they have back into energy.
Exactly. And so what now they're saying, I want you to eat less and exercise more. Remember the small children mm-hmm. we talked about? Well, these people who go in the clinical studies are highly motivated. They do eat less, and they exercise more, and they initially lose weight, and then they gain it all back. Why? Well, you can make genetically obese animals and have them eat less and exercise too. They'll lose weight, But when you do an autopsy on them, what do you find? They haven't lost very much fat. The weight they've lost, they've been cannibalizing their own muscles and organs. And that's exactly what happened to these people. Unless you relieve that fat trap, that basically if they eat less and exercise more, they'll start cannibalizing their own bodies. And unless you think Karen Carpenter was a good role model, that's not a good thing to happen.
Now, the other extreme are the people that we've been envying, the thin people who can eat all day long and never gain any weight, but you say they're paying a heavy price for it.
Well, they really are. And again, the classic example in the last Olympics was Michael Phelps. I eat 12,000 calories a day, and he looks incredibly skinny, if not almost somewhat emaciated. Great athlete, but skinny 12,000 calories. Well, in Michael's case, it's not quite that simple. He's so inefficient in converting calories going in the mouth into ATP, he has to eat more calories to be able to basically just move around and exercise. Now, what's happening to all the calories? They're not being stored in the adipose tissue, that's clear. They're being converted to free radicals. And what do free radicals do? They accelerate the aging process. So here's a person who looks great in a swimsuit, who may not live as long as somebody like Manuel Uribe, who is grossly overweight, but is perfectly normal.
So the solution for Michael Phelps is to get on a zone diet and take fish oil?
It really is, and the reason why is because that will basically improve the production of chemical energy coming from dietary, and as a consequence, he won't have to basically eat as many calories. He therefore won't be making as much free radicals, and therefore, by reducing the free radical load in the body, he'll probably live longer and live better.
So are people who are in between those two extremes the luckiest of all?
They really are. These are the people who basically are not gluttons. Somebody eating 12,000 calories a day is a glutton any way you cut it. They're not gluttons, and they're never hungry. They're simply genetically lucky. They'd like to think of themselves as morally superior, but they're simply genetically lucky. And so we look at the extremes on both sides, say, okay, we have some genetic and hormonal problems here. We can't change their genes, but can we change the expression of their genes? And the answer is a resounding yes, but you have to treat food like a drug, be taken at the right dosage, at the right time, for the rest of your life.
This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. Today we're talking with Dr. Barry Sears, nutrition researcher and creator of The Zone Diet. I believe you've got at least 11 books, the first one being Enter the Zone, which you introduced the concepts, and the most recent that just came out in September of 2008, Toxic Fat, When Good Fat Turns to Bad. Toxic fat is really the best starting point now for people learning not only about fat problem, but the whole system of what they can do about it.
Well, exactly, and it is a system. See, we think of the word diet as a short-term period of hunger and deprivation to try to look good in the swimsuit. But the Greek root of the word diet means way of life. That's what a diet is. It's a way of life. And for what purpose? Not to lose weight, but to control inflammation. And if you control inflammation, that becomes the definition of anti-aging. See, nothing will raise the cackles of the medical establishment faster than saying, I'm an anti-aging medicine. You know, say, what a hokum that is. But change the word slightly. Say, oh, I practice anti-inflammatory medicine. They say, tell us more about this. You're one of, you know, this is exactly what we're doing. But they're both looking for the same goal. How to live longer, how to live better, and what basically are the things we can do in terms of our daily life that could basically change our genes in such a way to basically live longer. Well, we know one thing is basically eating less calories. In every species ever studied, if they eat less calories, they live longer with less disease. Well, that's easy if you're never hungry. And there lies the problem. If you're always hungry, and changes in the diet in the last 30 years have made Americans far more hungry. We talked earlier about the fat trap, those who have a genetic predisposition. As our consumption of refined carbohydrates has increased, that fat trap has become activated. But there's one other thing in our diet that basically everybody is experiencing, and this is an increase of toxic fat in the brain, because this gives rise to another recently discovered group of hormones called endocannabinoids. Now, we first learned about these in the 60s, when people first started smoking marijuana. And what was the first consequence of that?
The munchies.
Almost uncontrollable appetite. Well, they found out that the active ingredient in marijuana was binding with certain receptors in the brain that basically turned on constant hunger. When they actually isolated the hormone in the brain that was the legitimate activator of those receptors, it turned out to be a hormone derived from toxic fat. And this toxic fat we talk about is a consequence of increased carbohydrate and increased omega-6 fatty acids. And so what you've seen in the last 30 years, regardless of your genetics for a fat trap, everybody in America is hungrier than they used to be. And if you take in more calories than the body can eat at that point in time, you store them as fat.
Well, and I also want to mention, you have several websites. Probably the best one to start with is simply drsears.com, drsears.com. We'll get back to Dr. Sears in a moment. Tired of your organization having the same old pep talks from a motivational speaker? I love making presentations that challenge conventional thinking about aging and help people adopt beliefs that help them think, feel, look, and be more youthful. When you think younger, it shows in your posture, your demeanor, facial expressions, and energy level. And when you feel better, you'll look more youthful and you'll look more attractive. And when that happens, people even treat you better. Let me help you and your employees or colleagues think, feel, look, and be more youthful too. Check out my demo video at antiagingspeaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com. Or give me a call. My phone number is on all my websites. To learn more about any of my services, speaking, personal coaching, books, hypnosis CDs, or my free Defy Aging newsletter, just go to my portal site, notaging.com, notaging.com, and it'll link you to whatever you want. And a reminder, all the previous shows are archived on agelesslifestyles.com, where you can see a summary, guest pictures, find links mentioned on the show, and download or stream the MP3. And now back to Dr. Sears. So how does fish oil fit into all this?
Well, basically, in terms of the fish oil, what it does, it obviously reduces inflammation throughout the body, but it also inhibits the binding of these endocannabinoids to those receptors that make you hungry all the time. That was the secret weapon we had for Manuel. Yes, we put them on the Zone diet, but we also gave him high levels of fish oil after every meal. And within two meals, he was never hungry again. In fact, his only complaint was he could not eat all the food. And for Manuel to consume 2,000 calories a day today is a major task. Why? He's simply never hungry. What we've done is, again, by using diet, you've gone in and changed the expression of your genes and the hormones that come from those genes. And by doing so, you basically take an otherwise untenable situation and make it quite manageable.
So for the average person, if they start taking more fish oil, they'll have less of an appetite.
You have to take a lot of it. Now, keep in mind that our grandparents gave our parents a tablespoon of cod liver oil every day. Standard issue. You could not leave the house unless you had a tablespoon of cod liver oil, the world's most disgusting food known to mankind. Now, the day the parents stopped giving their children fish oil may have been the biggest breakdown in public health in the 20th century. Because we're paying the price for it now. By taking those omega-3 fatty acids out of the diet, we took out our safety card. We took out our safety net. And all of a sudden, our ability to control inflammation basically dropped dramatically. And now we became basically open season for the new agricultural policies first started by Earl Butz, which are now basically coming to haunt us in so many different ways. You know, our increased obesity and diabetes is only the most obvious. But you see it now in neurological conditions. Attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in children. It's not due to bad parenting. It's simply due to those children who have their genes now being expressed because they don't have adequate levels of these fatty acids in their diet.
Has there been any research on ADHD and fish oil?
Oh, quite a bit. Actually, I published a major paper last year. We took children who had ADHD who were already having their optimal dosage of their drugs, taking one of the Concerta or Ritalin. And what we did was put them on high-dose fish oil. Same amount I gave Randall McCoy, the Segal Mine disaster, a miner. And within 4 weeks, you'd see dramatic improvements in your behavior over and above that of the drug alone. And the day they stopped taking the fish oil, their behavior began to deteriorate once again. Now, it's not fair. It's just saying that for those children, that because of their genetic predispositions, which were kept under wraps as long as they had adequate levels of omega-3 fatty acids in their diet, once those levels dropped, they're basically getting exposed, and now basically the ADHD manifests itself.
Now, if somebody just goes to the grocery store or health food store and gets some fish oil, takes a tablet, that's just a fraction of the dosage that you're recommending. How do you get people comfortable with taking what to most people seem massive doses?
Well, first of all, you have to explain that if they go to the grocery store or the health food store, what they're probably buying is the sewer of the sea.
Lovely.
Actually, in reality, there's no fish in the world today that's not contaminated with things we've thrown into the environment in the last two generations. It could be PCBs, dioxins, organic mercury, flame retardants. When you pull out the fish oil, all of those are water and soluble, and they end up concentrated in the fish oil. So when you go to the health food store or the supermarket, and you get these fish oil capsules, what you're buying is basically encapsulated sewer of the sea. Now, how do you know? Well, here's a simple test. I call it the toothpick test.
Okay.
If you have capsules at home, take maybe four or five capsules out and break them open and put them into a shot glass. Now, put the shot glass into your freezer and come back 5 hours later with a toothpick. If you can't put the toothpick through the fish oil, meaning it's frozen solid, you've been taking the sewer of the sea. If you can put the toothpick through the fish oil, it might be okay. So most people are going to take their fish oil today and say, uh-oh, I've been taking the sewer of the sea. And say, yeah, fortunately, you were taking such a low dose, it didn't hurt you because it didn't help you. Well, that's why one of the things we've been developing in our clinical studies is really a finger prick blood test that allows you to say, how much fish oil do I need? And after running thousands of these tests, I can tell you, for Americans to lower their levels of inflammation, it takes quite a bit. And the reason why this takes more today than 30 or 40 years ago is because our diet today is far more pro-inflammatory than it was 30 or 40 years ago. So we have a major problem here. We make medicine a lot more complex than it really is. We have these specialists, but in reality, all of our chronic diseases that seem to be persistent all come from inflammation. Inflammation that is primarily controlled by our diet. And if we tend to ignore that, then we're basically doomed to basically see greater and greater levels of these disturbances occurring at earlier and earlier ages.
Now, that finger prick test that you said, I talked to your staff a bit ago, and they said it will be available in a few months, and the information will be on the website.
Yes, because people hate to give blood. I hate to give blood. That's why I have an annual physical every 5 years, because it hurts to take blood out. But a finger prick to say, okay, if I had one test that could predict my future with frightening precision, this would be the test. In terms of anti-aging, what is our greatest fear as we age longer? The loss of the brain. Doesn't no good to live longer if the brain's not there. And it turns out ratios of certain fatty acids in the blood can predict with frightening certainty your likelihood of developing Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because Alzheimer's is an inflammatory disease, and if your blood is rich in toxic fat, basically you also know you're going to have toxic fat in the brain, and that is basically advancing Alzheimer's. Actually, we did a study that will be published sometime this month taking animals, and I hate to do animal experiments because you have to kill them. This is the one first one I've done in 30 years. I usually only work with humans, but you can induce a brain injury.
And you don't kill the humans.
No, we never do that. Just make them live longer. But you can induce a brain injury by having a weight flung on their head. And when they do that, they basically see their axons snap. And you see now a development of what are called amyloid precursor proteins at the ends of the axon that have snapped. These are basically the beginnings of amyloid plaques. And what we did is we would now give the animals increasing amounts of fish oil. And as you increase the levels of fish oil, even after the brain trauma, you'd see virtually no production of these amyloid plaques, which says, if I really want to basically reduce the likelihood of getting Alzheimer's, I better be making sure I'm taking adequate levels of fish oil to reduce the inflammation in the brain.
Lest we leave people hanging with the sewer of the sea, there are a number of companies who are producing very refined, reputable fish oil, but you'd have to be very, very careful. And you've been refining it for about 20 years now and really got it down to a science. And information on that is drsears.com and in your literature.
Right. Basically, this is not something Farmer Brown does in his backyard. It is very, very complex. But once you have it, you have what I call weapons-grade fish oil. It's highly concentrated. highly pure, and now ready for action. And that's why most of the studies published in the medical literature in the last probably 4 or 5 years have this type of weapons-grade fish oil that gives these remarkable results, but you have to take a therapeutic dose. If you take a placebo dose, nothing's going to happen.
And what dosage are we talking about for the average American with some inflammation, but not major health problems?
It doesn't depend on your age, weight, or sex. It depends on how much inflammation you have and where it's located. Now, let's say you're well. You're normal weight. You have no chronic disease. Well, you know, what your grandparents gave your parents was probably a pretty good dosage to maintain that. That's about a tablespoon of cod liver oil or about 2.5 grams of these omega-3 fatty acids. But let's say you're overweight or you have heart disease or diabetes. Plan to double that dosage. And what if you no longer have silent inflammation but screaming pain, like arthritis? Still higher. And what if your inflammation's in the brain? You basically have ADHD, multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, or like Randall McCoy, brain trauma, still higher levels. So that's why basically, not a guessing game, the blood tests do exist that you can do with frightening precision, really titrate, basically add just the right amount to bring that person into a zone of inflammation, not too low that you can't basically fight off attacking microbes, but not too high that the body's attacking the cell.
It's all balance.
It always has been.
I do want to get into the zone diet, too. A lot of people are familiar with the Mediterranean diet because it's gotten so much press. How is zone different from Mediterranean?
Well, in many ways, the zone diet is simply the evolution of the Mediterranean diet. The base of the zone diet and the Mediterranean diet is eating fruits and vegetables because they have lots of color. And those compounds that give them the color turn out to have some very, very profound anti-inflammatory capabilities. On the zone diet and the Mediterranean diet, you eat adequate but not excessive amounts of fish and chicken. On the zone diet and the Mediterranean diet, you eat lots of monounsaturated fats like olive oil. I say, what's the difference? The difference is on the zone diet, you cut back the amounts of grains and starches. That's the bread, the pasta, the rice, the bread, and make up for it by eating even more fruits and vegetables. So the Mediterranean diet's a good diet. The zone diet, it has greater hormonal control, and that's why I call it the evolution of the Mediterranean diet.
As I said earlier, you include soy in that. I hear a number of people concerned that soy may produce more estrogens for people. Is that a concern, and who would it be a concern for?
Oh, it actually is a concern. I wrote a whole book called The Soy Zone saying, I love soy protein if, there's a couple ifs. If, one, you don't have a lot of soy oil, which rich in omega-6 fatty acids with it, and two, you've extracted out many of the isoflavones, which can actually bind to the thyroid receptor. So where do you find such soy proteins that basically don't have many omega-6 fatty acids and won't bind to the thyroid receptor? It turns out, in terms of a lot of the imitation soy meat product, the soy hamburgers, the soy sausages, the soy hot dogs, these are not bad sources of protein. Now you've taken out many of the anti-nutrients of soy, and they become a great way of basically adding more protein to the diet, but in a way that basically is much more renewable and has some other great hormonal benefits as a consequence.
I also wanted to ask you about sugar substitutes. Which ones are you okay with?
Well, they all have a problem because they're sugar substitutes. I mean, of all the sugar substitutes, probably Splenda is the best. But here's the downside. It basically, when these sugar substitutes interact with your tongue, they taste like sugar. And that's why we use them.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the tongue isn't too smart. It's already sending hormonal signals to the pancreas saying, release insulin. And what insulin's job is to drive down blood sugar levels. So when you drink a Diet Coke that has no calories, say, oh, this is our great strategy. I'll drink these all day long, and I'll never get hungry. Well, it doesn't quite work that way because when you drive down blood sugar levels because you get these false signals from the tongue, basically the brain says, where's my sugar? I want you to eat more. And so we have some very interesting data from Harvard Medical School saying the more diet-free drinks you consume, the fatter you become. It's not the diet-free drinks are causing you to become fat, but their false signals being sent to the pancreas is increasing insulin. And it's excess insulin that makes us fat and keeps us fat.
And that one we can't even blame Burl Butz on.
No, but it's still part of the marketing
that is getting us to eat the wrong food and drink the wrong things.
As the great philosopher Pogo said, we've met the enemy, and the enemy is us.
Uh-huh. Statins. You said statins increase arachidonic acid, decrease memory, and the arachidonic acid is the key in this toxic fat. What should we be saying to our doctors when they say take a statin?
Tell the doctors and say, read the literature. Why do you take a statin? Because if you take statins, you basically won't die of heart disease. That's true. The data does say if I take statins, I will not basically have nearly the mortality. But if I compare the studies, and these are published a few years ago, of all the studies on statins and reducing mortality, that's a very nice endpoint for easy to judge, and look at all the studies that have used fish oil, the fish oil has been superior to statins. So if they limit, if the side effect of fish oil, if you take enough, is to make you smarter, why aren't taking fish oils first and then taking statins only as the last resort? Well, it's because basically you can buy the fish oil in the supermarket and the health food store, and the drug companies say, you know, I want to sell statins. But Americans have been led down this primrose path that basically cholesterol causes heart disease, and it doesn't. What causes heart disease is inflammation. And I go back to saying our number one drug to reduce a heart attack remains an aspirin, and that has no effect on cholesterol. Now, what does cause the body to increase cholesterol production? It turns out the same thing that makes you fat and keeps you fat, and that's the hormone insulin. So I think you'll call me crazy, but if you really want to prevent a heart attack, then just follow the zone diet that reduces insulin and take lots of fish oil, reduces inflammation, and you've got a pretty good 1-2 punch to live longer and live better.
For someone who does all that and their doctor is still saying your lipid profile is still off and they're recommending statins, are there any alternatives that you would want to consider instead of the statins?
I guess the best alternative would be the diet. Talk about cholesterol. They're really kind of focusing on the bad cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
So let's focus on that. Now, there's two types of bad cholesterol. There's the good bad cholesterol and the bad bad cholesterol. And say, well, this sounds, you know, kind of funky. Well, the good bad cholesterol is the big fluffy LDL particles. These are like beach balls floating in your bloodstream. They'll never hurt you. The bad bad cholesterol are the LDL particles, which are like little baseballs. And these are the ones that can kill you. Now, how do you know if you have good bad cholesterol or bad bad cholesterol? Well, it turns out it's the ratio of two lipids in your bloodstream. One is called triglycerides, and the other is called HDL cholesterol. So take your most recent blood test and take the triglycerides divided by the HDL cholesterol. If that number is less than 2, you have good bad cholesterol, and no matter how much cholesterol you have, you're probably not going to get a heart attack. On the other hand, if that number is greater than 2, you probably have a lot of bad, bad cholesterol, and no matter how low you get your cholesterol, you're still a likely candidate to basically get a heart attack, because we know that half the heart attacks are caused by what is called sudden death. You grab your chest and you die on the spot, and half those people have normal cholesterol levels. I say, well, how could they die? Their cholesterol levels are normal because they had that pimple in their artery exploding, like a pimple on, you know, for a teenager's face.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they get inflamed, they explode. Same thing to the artery. Now, what causes that explosion? It has nothing to do with cholesterol, but it has everything to do with inflammation.
So somebody who's following the zone diet, taking the fish oil, still has a doctor telling him to take statins. If nothing else, make sure that he's not just talking about total cholesterol, but that he's looking at the triglyceride to HDL ratio.
Exactly. And then it's saying, will there be someone who still needs some statins? Probably, but they won't need as much. And here's a good rule of thumb for drugs. If you can cut their dosage by one half, you cut their side effects by one half. And what's the biggest side effect for statin? Loss of memory. And why? Because as you lower cholesterol by statin, you're also increasing the levels of toxic fat in the blood and the brain, and that's causing memory loss.
I thought we'd wrap up with some surprising research, and that is that we think that being the ideal body weight gives us the best longevity, but the research is saying being a little overweight actually has a slightly better track record.
This research came out about, 3 years ago from the Centers for Disease Control, not a schlocky outfit. And they said, let's ask the question, let's put everything aside, basically mortality, again, we're looking at death, versus body weight. And they found out that basically people who were overweight had much better likelihood of not dying prematurely than people who basically were normal weight. Now, yes, at the extremes, the people had very high obesity and very much underweight were more likely to die. But if you look at in terms of normal weight, overweight, and even obese, there wasn't that much difference. But the lowest point was at the overweight population. And so this brought out howls of protest. How dare you tell people? They were just telling what the data says. So when they analyzed the data again at Mayo Clinic, they got the same results. And when the CDC again analyzed it, it was even more striking. I say, do not confuse me with the facts, because in my heart, I know I'm right. If I look good in an Armani suit, I will live forever. Well, it doesn't work that way. The reason why overweight people can actually live longer, because their excess fat can actually act as a toxic waste dump to suck up a lot of toxins in our environment to keep them out of sight. And one of the things that it can suck up is toxic fat. But as you get thinner, you don't have the toxic waste dump. And now if you're making toxic fat by the diet, eating a diet rich in carbohydrates and rich in omega-6 fatty acids, it cannot be stored and now begins circulating through your blood, attacking all of your organs.
So the moral of the story is how much you weigh is a very crude measure of your health, and you know, look at the real measures of health instead of just weight.
Exactly. And the best marker of how long you're going to live is how much inflammation you have in the body. And in the book, though, I talk about blood tests there. I give a number of subjective ways you can look to see if you have high levels of inflammation. And if you do, then you have a clinically proven dietary program to follow that will reduce the levels of that inflammation beginning within 30 days.
Terrific. We've been talking with Dr. Barry Sears, nutrition researcher, creator of the Zone Diet. His newest book, Toxic Fat, really gives you everything you need to know, and I highly recommend it. Website is drsears.com, drsears.com. Dr. Sears, thank you so much. I think this is terrific.
Well, Michael, thank you for the opportunity of being on your show.
Commentary. What can we say about the interview with Dr. Sears? As you probably gathered, I'm very impressed with Dr. Sears' Zone Diet, fish oil, his track record, and the well-designed research that supports his recommendations. I purposely began the show by reviewing some of the data, and you'll recall we did the two large-scale studies with children in which they exercised more and studied about nutrition but still didn't lose weight, comparisons of the food pyramid diet with the Zone Diet, the heaviest man in the world, the cold miner who was in a coma, his work with Olympic athletes. I did this to establish both the research track record and also the clinical applications, that this isn't just theory, that there's a lot behind it. Frankly, Dr. Sears' books aren't an easy read. Rather, they try to speak to both scientists and non-scientists, and they include a lot of chemical names and processes so those who want to know the science can get the validation. Indeed, one of the remarkable aspects of Dr. Sears' books is how he explains that hunger and metabolism are very complex, with many hormones and other chemicals and very complex feedback loops. Lest this sound too daunting, his book Toxic Fat covers what you need to know in about 150 pages. The other 200 pages are recipes and more detailed explanations and references. We covered a lot of information, so I thought it would be helpful to summarize a few of the main points. First, American diets have changed with the increase of omega-6 fatty acids from corn oil sweeteners, processed food, and junk food, at the same time that our fish consumption decreased and cod liver oil went out of favor. The result was an imbalance in omega-3 fatty acids, which fish is the primary source, to omega-6 fatty acids. The result was an imbalance in the ratio of the omega-6 fatty acids to the omega-3 fatty acids, which primarily derive from fish. This imbalance results in inflammation, the process that feeds most chronic diseases, including cardiovascular disease. Second, his "It's Not Your Fault" argument says that with today's typical American diets, most overweight people have genes that are very insulin sensitive. The result is that too many of their calories get stored as fat, and not enough are converted to ATP, the body's fuel. Eating more adds weight. Eating less results in being constantly hungry and lethargic. The Zone Diet helps keep the insulin level stable. The fish oil helps reduce inflammation and curbs the appetite.
Third, I would point out that Americans typically consume 1/10 or 2/10 of a gram of omega-3 fatty acids a day and 10 times that amount of omega-6 fatty acids. The American Heart Association recommends that people with no coronary heart disease eat fish at least twice a week. They recommend that people with documented coronary heart disease consume 1 gram of EPA and DHA, that's the key ingredients in fish oil, quote, in consultation with a physician. They say patients who wish to lower triglycerides should have 2 to 4 grams a day under a physician's care. And they note that high intakes, such as 3 grams or more, could cause excessive bleeding in some people. And of course, we have millions of Americans with cardiovascular problems who are taking blood thinners, which would increase their tendency to bleed and would be cause for carefully coordinating with a physician. The typical fish oil capsule that you would get in a health food store has up to 1 gram of the EPA and DHA. That's the most they can cram into one capsule. Dr. Sears' dose are 2.5 grams. That would be 2.5 times that 1 gram capsule for somebody who's healthy. 5 grams for somebody who's overweight, has diabetes, or heart disease. 7.5 grams for somebody with chronic pain. 10 grams for people with neurological conditions. And he used 15 grams a day with that coal miner. Most people taking those higher doses are taking a liquid version as opposed to taking a handful of capsules a day. In sum, I see the Zone diet as very balanced and moderate. Low-carb critics say it's too high in protein. Dr. Sears' recommendation for fish oil are higher than most professionals have been recommending, but it certainly seems worth considering. And to me, the acid test is not debates, but trying it and seeing what the results are. Emails. Love getting emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. In our interview with movement guru Jenny Maddox last week, we had three kinds of responses. Had a couple people commented on how the image of our body's tissues becoming cold and stiff after being inactive for a mere 12 minutes was very motivating in moving and stretching and massaging more. A couple of ADHD listeners felt vindicated that they needed more movement when they were in their school or when they're in their offices, and that the schools and the offices stifled their creativity. And third, a couple people commented on how much they appreciated Jenny sharing her story of dealing with breast cancer and what that meant to her. Baby steps. I always try to leave you with some little tweak in how you think or what you do that'll help you live longer and healthier and happier, the purpose of our program. The baby step for this week is to consider that people who are overweight or obese aren't sloths or gluttons, but are probably in a seemingly no-win trap. How does this help? Well, it helps you be kinder and gentler with others and possibly yourself. It prevents you from feeling that little anger and resentment. Oh my God, how could somebody allow themselves to get that way? Instead, it gives you empathy and understanding. But this week, I'd like to make an exception. First time I've done this, and challenge you to take a big step. If you aren't satisfied with your health or aren't satisfied with your weight, read the first 150 pages of Toxic Fat. It's a New York Times bestseller, so it'll be in all the bookstores and should soon be in the libraries as well. When you do that, you might want to consider trying the Zone diet, and you might want to consider trying some fish oil. I think the best way to find out whether Dr. Sears' approach works is to try it and see what the results are. A reminder, for information on anti-aging psychology or to subscribe to my free Defy Aging newsletter, just go to the portal site notaging.com, notaging.com. It'll link you to whatever information and services you need. I'd love to get feedback and comments on the show. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. This is America's anti-aging psychologist, Dr. Michael Bricky, with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net, your source for cutting-edge thinking on being youthful at every age. And until next week, thank you for joining us on our quest to live longer, healthier, and happier.